The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Joe Simpson for the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Triangle Yesteryear. On this program, you will hear reminiscences of life around North Carolina's Triangle area, written by local authors. On today's program, I'll be reading from Journal of a Tour to North Carolina by William Atmore, 1787. This document was published by the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill in 1922 under the direction of the North Carolina Historical Society. Preface. The Journal of a Tour to North Carolina, written by William Atmore of Philadelphia, was a cherished possession of his great-granddaughter, the late Miss Rebecca Atmore of New Bern, North Carolina. She was a real belle of the 50s, who in character and person reflected the charm of that classic type of Southern womanhood that authors delight to picture. Thomas Atmore, of Devonshire, England, parish of Kensleane, born about 1692, who removed to America in 1713, was the grandfather of William Atmore, merchant of Philadelphia, of the firm of Atmore and Kager. In the winter of 1787, William Atmore came to North Carolina to collect debts owing to his firm and to obtain new business. While on his tour, he kept a diary, of which some parts have evidently been lost, but enough remains to form an interesting narrative. The handwriting of the original manuscript is clear and beautiful, and the ink as black as though it had been penned yesterday instead of over a century ago. Only the paper has become faded and torn by age. On this tour, or a subsequent one, William Atmore met Miss Sally Sitgreaves, the captivating daughter of Judge Sitgreaves, to whom he was married March 18, 1790. He died in Philadelphia in 1800 and was buried there. Tuesday, November 6th, 1787. About 11 o'clock a.m., I went on board the sloop Washington Packet, Captain Charles Kirby, master, bound on a voyage to Washington in North Carolina. After being on board a little while, the boat being sent to the shore, I took that opportunity to land again, to get some further stories for the voyage as yet omitted, and after waiting some time, till about 1 o'clock, our captain came down. We rowed on board and directly hoisted sail. Upon inquiry, find our company on board to be as follows. Charles Kirby, Captain. William Hest, Mate. Daniel, William, John, and James, Seaman. James, a cook. James Easton, Benjamin Brown, Peter Mackey, William Atmore, Sylvia Easton, a little girl, and Rose, a black girl servant to Sylvia, all passengers. No remarkable occurrence happened this afternoon, although I, like Don Quixote, watching for adventures, unless I record that one of the seamen lost his cap while busy getting in the anchor. This was a very fine day, the wind being from north to northeast. We had a pleasant sail by Gloucester Point, League Island, Mud Island, Little and Big Tinicum Islands. We amused ourselves from time to time eating beef and drinking grog upon the quarter-deck, chatting and playing. After dark we came to below Chester. When the ebb began, our pilot, Gilbert McCracken, turned out and got the sloop under way till about 4 o'clock in the morning. By this time it became so foggy it became dangerous to proceed, and therefore cast anchor in 4 fathom water, supposing ourselves a little above Christiana Creek. Wednesday, November 7th. At 11 o'clock a.m., the fog cleared away, and we found ourselves off Wilmington. At 12, the ebb beginning, we hove up anchor and made sail, passed a brig coming in, having hurricane houses on deck, and a number shallops and boats. came to alongside the wharf at Newcastle and received on board Mr. William Ford, a passenger, with his baggage. I went ashore and paid a visit to Thomas Keene, Esquire, Sheriff of Newcastle County, drank a bottle of wine with him at his house. Then he came on board with me. We sat down in the cabin, where we treated him with such as we had. We got into good humor when our captain came down and let my visitor know that he was sorry to disturb him, but that we were then half a mile from Newcastle. Mr. Keene went ashore in the boat in company with Mr. Mackey. We dropped about 2 miles below Newcastle, then let go anchor. Here we lay all night, there coming on a thick fog in the night, which prevented our making sail. We dismissed our pilot at Newcastle, Captain Kirby undertaking to pilot the sloop down the rest of the way. Thursday, November 8th. As we lay at anchor, hailed a sloop going by us, and, finding they were from New York, with oysters, sent our boat on board, and got 7 or 8 bushels at 2/9 per bushel. Mackey and Ford, who went in the boat with 2 seamen, stopped at Newcastle. They rowed down under shore, where Ford luckily found a man who brought him a message. They then returned on board. At 11:30, got up anchor and hoisted sail. But little wind. Hazy weather. Comes on again and some rain at 12:30. This forenoon, the brig Charleston Packet, Captain Strong, passed us as we lay at anchor. A ship appears stretching up 4 or 5 miles off, who must have passed us in the fog this morning early. At 3:00 in the afternoon, being about halfway between Reedy Point and Reedy Island, about 1 mile out from the Delaware shore, the ebb being strong, little wind since we weighed anchor. Having had boat ahead towing since we got up anchor, we found the tide set us fast forward toward a shoal or spit of land lying off. Cast the lead, and at the last throw by the captain found only 9 feet of water. He immediately ordered to let go the anchor. This was done directly, but the force of the tide was such the cable instantly parted, and we directly grounded on the shoal at about half tide, a very little distance from our anchor. After getting in sails, our seamen went in the boat and weighed our anchor by the buoy rope, with very little difficulty, and brought it on board. Here we lay till about sunrise next day, having got out another anchor. Friday, November 9th. This morning, there being a light breeze to take us off the shoal, we got up anchor, our boat ahead to tow. We got over to the channel, towards the Delaware shore, and the flood being strong and the wind rather ahead, came again to anchor, waiting for the tide to go down to the piers. We all turned out this morning about sunrise, a very fine morning. Vast flocks of blackbirds in sight, going from Reedy Island to the main. About 1:00 in the afternoon we came to at the piers and made fast to the outermost pier without letting go an anchor. After getting dinner, the captain, Easton, Brown, Mackey, Ford, and myself went ashore, the captain resolving to wait for a wind to go down the bay in the morning. We went up to the town of Port Pen, and amused ourselves till the evening when we all came on board. We found the cabin nearly cleaned up against our return, by orders of the mate. The piers of Reedy Island, as they are generally called, are not built at Reedy Island, but on the shore of the Delaware, opposite to the body of that island, and consists of first a long wharf joining to the main, then of 3 square piers composed of logs, and filled up with stones and dirt, sunk in a row, at nearly equal distances from each other, opposite that long wharf, leaving an interval, or thoroughfare, for the waste to pass betwixt them, about 70 or 80 feet wide between each pier or wharf, the whole forming a kind of mole or jetty, above 300 feet out into the river. The use of these piers is to form a harbor for vessels against the dangers of the ice in winter. And it is found to answer the purpose very well. Last winter, above 50 sail found shelter there till the navigation was clear. I should have mentioned that on the north side of the other piers, at some distance, another pier is sunk to serve as a kind of outwork to the others in breaking the force of the ice coming down. Reedy Island is about 3 miles long, and not above 1/4 mile wide. It has formerly been banked in, but at present is not in culture, but overflowed in high tides. About 1/2 mile above the piers lies the village of Port Pen, consisting of 30 or 40 houses. It is on the river side and directly opposite the upper end of Reedy Island. The river is 6 miles over. After getting on board, we spent the evening very gaily. Mirth and festivity smiled around us. Every man endeavored to contribute to the general pleasure, and every attempt in these cases is received with favor. Saturday, November 10. At about 12:30, we cast off from the pier and got down to Bombay Hook in the night, let go anchor, then weighed about break of day and stood down the bay. Many vessels in sight, passed 2 brigs and a schooner that were coming up. Hailed the schooner, found her to be from Newbern, 15 days out. Captain Hudson. We overtook and passed a copper-bottom schooner with a crowd of canvas. One of our seamen, seeing her look so gay, gave her the name of the Macaw Schooner. Towards dusk came to anchor in the bay, about 20 miles above the lighthouse. The sky to the south and west looked very black and luring, which gave us considerable apprehension of a severe gale in the night. We let go our best bower and prepared for it in the best manner we could. Our whole company looked very blank and melancholy, quite a contrast to the gaiety of last evening. The wind pretty fresh. The shoals in Delaware Bay are marked to mariners by beacons and buoys. Sunday, November 11. Contrary to our expectations, we had no gale last night, and got early under way and passed down the bay and out to sea with a favorable gale. About 9 o'clock a.m. we passed the lighthouse at Cape Henlopen, about 2 miles distant. We stood out to sea, southeast, then stood to the southward, our captain intending to keep near the coast. When in mid-channel, one can see both capes, but cannot see from one cape to the other if one is ashore there. After getting a little past the lighthouse, I began to grow seasick, with the usual symptoms. Mackie also sick, and likewise Black Rose. The rest of our company is well. Monday, November 12. I still continue indisposed, and have eaten but little these 2 days. One's stomach nauseates solid food while seasickness lasts. The sea much smoother today than yesterday. The reflection of a blue sky makes the water appear of a greenish color. When there is a cloudy sky, the water appears of an azure or blue color. Tuesday, November 13. Today we are nearly well. Mackie and I eat our allowance at breakfast with a pretty good appetite. About 9 o'clock, the sea smooth and the weather hazy, we made the land, supposed about 30 miles to the southward of Cape Henry. We stood in within about 1/2 mile of the shore and surf, 6 fathom water. We have been trying this morning for some fish, but had no success. We passed Currituck Inlet today. In the evening we stood off shore, heaving about, when within 1/4 mile of the shore. We saw 7 or 8 craft standing up the coast. We supposed them bound for Norfolk. Hailed 2 of them. Answered, from New Inlet. It has been warm and pleasant today. Aired the cabin and the bedclothes. Wednesday, November 14. Rose at sunrise. A very fine day. After some time standing in for the land, find ourselves off Roanoke Island and Inlet. But little wind all the morning. The wind all day ahead. What we gain on one tack, we nearly lose on another. Saw several whales, and diverted ourselves with observing their spouting and blowing. One passed our bows within musket shot. Flocks of gulls about us. Tried again for fish, bottle with towline and deep sea, but cannot catch one. We are now about 40 miles from Cape Hatteras, which we wish to get round, but this contrary wind baffles us. In the afternoon the wind freshens on us, but still ahead. Thursday, November 15. About 3 o'clock in the morning came on a squall and rough sea, which lasted till about 9 o'clock in the morning. I am again sick. Wind still ahead of us. Find by observation at noon that we have gained but 11 miles southing in 24 hours past. Friday, November 16. Wind still ahead. A very brisk wind and rough sea today. Spoke a sloop bound from New York to Edenton. A brig in sight. A whale and swordfish pass us. I am again sick from the rough sea. In the evening came on rain, and fell calm. Our vessel rolled and pitched very much. The captain and people being on deck about 8 or 9 o'clock, the night dark, in hoisting the boom from the labboard to the starboard crutch, the boom, swinging over, crushed the head of one of the seamen, John, between it and the starboard crutch in a shocking manner. The poor man fell on the deck, and afterwards bled from his mouth, nose, and ears many quarts. They got him down into the cabin, and laid a sail for a bed. We expected him to die in a little while. We spent the night very disagreeably. His groans, and the bad situation in which he was, distressed us much. Saturday, November 17. Soon after we got something composed, about 12 last night, the wind came round to the northward and blew violently, with a high sea. We stood off the land, and afterwards laid to, under a reefed mainsail, till the morning, then stood on our way, and went at a great rate, past Cape Hatteras Shoals. After getting round the cape, stood in for land, and hoisted a signal for a pilot. One came on board who took charge of us till we passed over Ocracoke Bar, and came to anchor at the upper anchorage. About 1 o'clock here we found lying a brig, a schooner, and 3 sloops. Got dinner. After 3 o'clock, stood on, crossed a shoal or bar across the channel called the Swash, lying 6 miles or thereabouts from Ocracoke Bar. On the bar is 14 feet water at low tide. On the Swash is 8 feet at low tide. The tide rises on these shoals, but only a few feet on the bar, and a few inches on the Swash. The inlet opens into a great bay called Pamlico Sound, that receives into it many rivers on different sides. We crossed it, about 40 miles, partly in the night, the moon shining bright to the mouth of the Tar River. Went up that river in the night till we came off Bath Creek Mouth, and about 2 miles from a place called Bath Town, which lies up the creek. Then let go anchor till sunrise, being about 24 miles up the river. Sunday, November 18. Hoisted out our boat and set Mr. Brown on shore near the point, then stood on up the river 16 miles further to Washington, where we arrived about 1 o'clock. Here a number of gentlemen came on board us, went with David Shoemaker and paid a short visit at his house, returned on board and dined. Towards evening took a walk to Mr. Nuttall's, where was Mr. and Mrs. Shoemaker and Captain Eldridge, drank tea there. Mr. Mackey and I returned and slept on board. Monday, November 19. Muster Day in Washington, which brought a large number of people from the country. Mr. Richard Blackledge came to town. I dined at David Jones's in company with Kirby, Mackey, and Whitehall. Drank tea with Rachel Shoemaker. Many disorders in town, the militia, some of them fighting. This is the practice every muster day. Mr. Knight, a criminal who had escaped from Philadelphia, was taken up alongside our vessel and Captain Eldridge's. He was put in irons and sent to jail. I slept on board. Tuesday, November 20. Mr. Blackledge waited on me and kindly invited me to fix my residence with him and his brother Thomas, that I should have a room for myself, and he would furnish me a horse, etc., to be at my command during my stay in North Carolina. I had engaged quarters at Horn's Tavern, but now conclude to accept Blackledge's offer. I breakfasted on board. Blackledge called down at the vessel about dinner time, when we walked to the house, where he then introduced me to his brother Thomas, and to his brother's wife, Polly Blackledge. There were 2 young ladies dined with us, Miss Sally Salter, sister of Mrs. T. Blackledge, and Miss Armstrong, 2 agreeable-looking young ladies, but rather silent today. My chest, etc., was sent up in the evening. Wrote home to J.K. and William F., near Tarboro. Rain at night. Wednesday, November 21st. After breakfast, set off from Washington for New Bern in company with R. Blackledge, B. Brown, Captain Keyes, Jonathan G. Blunt, Dr. Loomis, and Charles Cook, all on horseback. We crossed Tar River in a scow, rode a mile or two, then Blackledge pushed on before us, in order to get to New Bern early. The rest of us rode about 22.5 miles, where we crossed Swift's Creek, on a bridge, This is a branch of Neuse River. We dined at Johnson's near the creek, about 22 miles from Washington. Rode to Curtis Tavern, 7.5 miles further. Here we stayed all night. Went to bed early, being a good deal tired. Thursday, November 22nd. At Curtis we met General Armstrong, to whom I was introduced by Mr. Blunt. After breakfast we led our horses to the River Neuse. At this place, about 200 yards over, here ferried over in a scow, and rode on 10 miles further to Newbern, first crossing Bachelor's Creek on a bridge, 3 miles from Curtis. Went in company with Blunt and Brown to Pendleton's Tavern. There I dined, paid several visits, saw John Green, John Kennedy, and Nathan Smith, drank tea at Nathan Smith's. At Mr. Green's I saw the pretty Miss Cogdell, whom Mr. Green introduced to me. When the tea-tackle began to rattle, I was sorry I had previously declared an engagement at Smith's, and was therefore obliged to move. Mr. Green waited on me to Smith's, and then to my quarters. Friday, November 23rd. Breakfasted at Pendleton's. In the forenoon there was a horse race. 5 horses started for the purse, which was won by a horse called Sweeper. I went to dine with John Green by invitation. There was Miss Cogdell, Mrs. Wright Stanley, Mr. Doyley, and John Green's brother. Towards evening took a walk with John Green to see the palace. The palace is a building erected by the province before the Revolution. It is a large and elegant black edifice, 2 stories high, with 2 wings for the offices, somewhat advanced in front towards the road. These are also 2 stories high, but lower in height than the main building. These wings are connected with the principal building by a circular arcade, reaching from each of the front corners to the corner of the wing. The palace is situated with one front to the River Trent and near the bank, and commands a pleasing view of the water. It was finished within in a very elegant manner. The grand staircase lighted from the sky by a low dome, which being glazed kept out the weather. This house was formerly the residence of the governors of this county, as well as the place where the legislature sat to transact their business. It is somewhat out of repair at present, and the legislature, not meeting at this time in Newbern, the only use now made of it is the townspeople use one of the halls for a dancing room, and one of the other rooms is used for a schoolroom. The only inhabitants we found about it were the schoolmaster and 1 little boy in the palace, school being out, and in the stables 2 or 3 horses who had taken shelter there from the bleakness of the wind. The King of Great Britain's arms are still suffered to appear in a pediment at the front of the building, which, considering the independent spirit of the people, averse to every vestige of royalty, appears something strange. We returned to Mr. Green's, where I drank tea with the ladies. Miss Cogdell's sister called in the evening, and 2 gentlemen came in. I was introduced to Mrs. Stanley, and accompanied the ladies, with several gentlemen, as far as my way went, where I bid them adieu for the evening. One instance of the vicissitudes of human affairs is exhibited in the situation of things at the palace, which, from being the seat of a little court under the regal government, is now become the seat of a petty schoolmaster with his little subjects. Another instance occurs in the person of Mr. Jonathan W. Stanley. The beautiful house built by Mr. Stanley at such a large expenditure, for that day, is still standing, and is an ornament to the town of Newbern. It is described as the house in which George Washington was entertained in 1791, and where Mr. Stanley gave hospitable welcome to General Nathaniel Greene, and made a loan to him of £40,000 for the necessities of his suffering soldiers of the Revolution. It is now owned by Honorable James A. Bryan, who served as a captain in the Confederate Army. The husband of Mrs. Stanley already mentioned, this man of whom the first knowledge I had was his being confined a prisoner in the jail of Philadelphia for debt, upon his liberation removed to this country, where by a series of fortunate events in trade during the war he acquired a great property, and has built a house in Newbern where he resides that is truly elegant and convenient, at an expense of near $20,000. He has a large wharf and distillery near his house. It is upon the Neuse River side of the town, and a fine plantation with 60 slaves thereon. One circumstance deserves to be recorded to his honor. Although brought to Philadelphia from Honduras a prisoner, arbitrarily, and on his arrival sent to jail by the person who brought him by force, yet upon his getting into affluent circumstances, he generously relieved the pecuniary distresses of that very person afterwards. The more meritorious, as upon a settlement of accounts with that man, it was found that he owed him nothing, but on the contrary, that person was in his debt. Mr. Wright Stanley, brother to John, invited me to spend a week with him at a farm, about 13 miles from New Bern, where he promises me the diversion of deer hunting and driving. Saturday, November 24. Races again today. 4 horses started. A mistake happened, the horses being nearly abreast. Some of the people halloed, "Set off! Go!" etc., which the riders supposed to be orders coming from the proper judges. They set off and run the course with great eagerness. The blunder created some anger and a good deal of mirth. The riders were young negroes of 13 or 14 years old, who generally rode bareback. I have attended the races yesterday and today, rather from motives of curiosity than any love to this amusement, and I think I shall hardly be prevailed on to go 10 steps in future to see any horse race. The objections and inconveniences attending this kind of amusement, obvious to me, are, first, large numbers of people are drawn from their businesses, occupations, and labor, which is a real loss to their families and the state. Second, by wagering and betting, much quarreling, wrangling, anger, swearing, and drinking is created and takes place. I saw it on the present occasion, prevalent from the highest to the lowest. I saw white boys and negroes eagerly betting half a quart of rum, a drink of grog, etc., as well as gentlemen betting high. Third, many accidents happen on these occasions. One of the riders, a negro boy who rid one of the horses yesterday, was, while at full speed, thrown from his horse by a cow being in the road and the horse driving against her in the hurry of the race. The poor lad was badly hurt in the head and bled much. The second day, one of the horses at starting ran violently amongst the people that sat in a place of apparent security. It was precisely the spot where I thought there was the greatest safety for foot people. More might be added. I went to the courthouse to see the proceedings there at the Superior Court, an argument about bringing on the cause of the heirs of Samuel Cornell against those who had bought property once his, but confiscated by the government. Saw H. Harris. He kindly offers me an introduction to ladies of his acquaintance in and about New Bern. We've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Yesteryear. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Joe Simpson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Triangle Yesteryear is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. Be finer than to be in Carolina in the morning.